the meeting, and I hope you, this is the second meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Labor. The first one that is well attended by members. And I'd like to welcome you to this meeting. And a word of welcome goes again to people from the labor movement who are here. I've seen a unionist from the fishing industry, the acting director general of the department, people from the media who are here, and other organizations, fraternal organizations, all welcome. Because this is the first sitting where majority of members are in, we'll start first with introductions so that we know who else is here. My name is Alec Mamagasen Chabeleng, chairperson of the committee. Puti, could you start with you and introductions?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Puti Manamela. I'm ANC Member of Parliament.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. My name is Eric Nyagamba, MP from the ANC.
Thank you, Togola Solomon, ANC.
Morning, compliments. I am Kosi Muelo Nongonyana, the member of the ANC deployed for the Oa Tambo region of South Africa. I'm the member of the committee.
I'm Ian Hollis. I'm the DA spokesperson on labor, or they call us the shadow minister of labor. And I'm from Gauteng, and happy new year to all of you that I haven't seen yet this year. I recognize all the familiar faces. It's good to be back. Thanks for coming.
George Buinamu, Democratic Alliance member of this committee. Thank you.
Kendi Sakaga from the Compensation Commissioner for Occupational Diseases, Department of Health. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Powas Roa. I'm the UIF commissioner, but I'm here in my capacity as a chairperson of the Interdepartmental Task Team on Ex-Mine Workers. Thank you.
Good morning, chairperson. My name is Trevor Bailey. I'm from the Provincial Office of the Department of Labor.
Morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm Sam Rotoga, the Acting DG of the Department of Labour.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Solomko Nondwango, representing the Sheltered Employment Factories. Thank you.
Morning, Members. My name is Kelly Chumbaka from UIF.
On the agenda, we have a briefing by the Department of Labor on the recommendations made by the Portfolio Committee on the Fishing Industry and Sheltered Employment Services Oversight Visit. That is the item on the agenda. The second item is follow-up briefing by the Interdepartmental Task Team on the payment of ex-mine workers. And I'm going to ask that we start with the ex-mine workers, and then we'll move into the other reports by other role players. Thank you very much. The ex-mine workers.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. The presentation has been circulated. The background information is that we did appear in the committee on the 16th of November to make a presentation. and the presentation that we'll make will talk more about the progress that we have made since we appeared in the committee. Now, in terms of background information, how this committee came into being, there was a People's Assembly in Bizane in the Eastern Cape from the 17th of September to the 19th of September in 2007. Now, during the parliamentary hearings, the group that was led by Mr. Nomazele, who has passed on, his soul rest in peace, came to make a presentation to the People's Assembly, and it was then where the decision was then taken to form an ad hoc committee to look into the grievances that is put into a committee. Thereafter, a motion was tabled in the National Assembly on September 19, 2007, to establish a committee to look into the concerns of ex-mine workers. Now, the committee made the following recommendations were made by the committee, which is the ad hoc committee. There was supposed to be the establishment of the interdepartmental task team consisting of the Department of Labor, Department of Health, Department of Minerals and Energy, National Treasury. Chairperson, with me today, I have a member from the Department of Health who is with us today. Unfortunately, National Treasury could not make it to the meeting because they say they are busy with issues relating to the budget. Now, the main objective of the task team should be to process the findings and recommendations, to trace all the monies that belong to the ex-mine workers, and once these monies have been traced, they need to publish regular reports on both electronic and print media. The interdepartmental task team should be headed by a senior official from the Department of Labor. All claims have to be processed from one office, which should be coordinated and managed by the interdepartmental task team on ex-mine workers. Monies of ex-mine workers that cannot be traced must be transferred to the state. All documents kept by the stakeholders that could assist in tracing the beneficiaries should be surrendered to the interdepartmental task team and kept by the Department of Labor. The Portfolio Committee of Labor should play an oversight role in the implementation of the recommendation and should receive regular briefing from the interdepartmental task team. Now, since the recommendations, Chairperson, this is a project, the progress that has been made. The interdepartmental task team and provincial steering committee have been constituted by the Department of Labor. Regular meetings have been held by the interdepartmental task team and the provincial steering committee. The interdepartmental task team has made recommendations to the previous portfolio committee of labor after it was constituted. Ex-mine workers have started to receive payments since these recommendations, Chairperson, from the Department of Labor of Health under the CCOD and also the Department of Labor under the Unemployment Insurance Fund. There is some information that we need from DEBA, which previously held a lot of information from ex-mine workers because they were also assisting in paying for the ex-mine workers in terms of their salaries and other things. So we did contact them, and there is information that we have received. Now, Chairperson, if I may talk about the membership, I need to indicate that initially we had the task team was made by the department as per recommendations, but we did get the Chamber of Mines to come on board, the Pension Fund for 19, Pension Fund and Providence Fund for 1970. Were represented initially in the task team. We also have the Rand Mutual Assurance, which was part of the task team. And a lot of work then took place in terms of exchanging the list. I need to indicate that the Chamber of Mines has indicated that they've done the work that they're supposed to do because the list which was forwarded to them by ex-mine workers, they did not find any beneficiary who had outstanding payments from their side. So they actually said to us as a task team, we should take their effort as have been completed, and they believe there's no role that they need to play further. So that's why in our meetings we don't find the Chamber of Mines anymore, because they believe that they've concluded their task. Now, continuing the overall progress is that the former Minister of Labour, Mr. Membatisi Mdladlane, has addressed the ex-mine workers and has announced through the media in terms of advocacy campaigns to get people to come forward. Because we did appoint the committee and indicated that the problem that we have, especially from Department of Health, is that there is money that is available, but beneficiaries are not coming forward. So that effort was to bring more people forward to claim their money. He also urged those who have legitimate claims to come forward and urged them to bring adequate documentation to validate their claims. As a problem that we experienced, that we put also to the committee, was DEBA not coming on board, but the minister also engaged DEBA to provide interdepartmental task team with outstanding information. And that did happen at Chairperson. We were able to send information to DEBA, and we are actually awaiting some response. So that was the background. Now, the brief today, Chairperson, is as per the Labour Portfolio Committee's request, the Department of Labour will, through the Commissioner, as the Chairperson of the Interdepartmental Task Team, will provide feedback on the progress made so far on issues of payment to ex-mine workers, brief the committee on the challenges faced by the Department of Labour, Department of Health, Rand Mutual Assurance, and the possible solutions to the challenges. The progress that we have registered, Chairperson, since we came to the committee, is that up to today, a total of 567 payments to the value of 2.5 million have been paid to ex-mine workers in the last presentation we made to this committee on the 16th of November 2010. We reported the payment of 442 ex-mine workers and a total amount of 2 million. The progress is that we have paid within this short space of time 125 ex-mine workers and additional 500,000 rands. We have submitted some information about to DEBA. As soon as they validate the documents, then we will be able to continue the payment. The challenges that we face, still the previous challenges, Chairperson, is that the information with regard to the period of service in the mine is not available on most of the list that is given to us. We see the gap, then it's difficult for us to get the period of service of ex-mine workers and also determine the claims on the system. Information about the last salary on the claimant is not available. Some of the applicants do not have bank accounts. We did indicate that we're actually assisting some of the applicants to have a bank account. Now, the solution is that obviously we have contacted DEBA to help us with information, and as soon as the information comes, we'll be able to pay. Now, we previously had phase one. Phase one was the 2,100 people that we have received applications where we had to do the verification. But we also started with phase two, which means other people can also come forward to make a new application. Chairperson, I will hand over to Ms. Kaka to present the issues around the Department of Health and CCOD.
Thank you, Commissioner. Since the 16th of November 2010, the Department of Health managed to pay 35. That is going to add to the 6 that is on the report. Which is 42 payments have been done since November, since 16 November 2010. And then out of the 40 applications which have not been opened, they have been opened, and which will add to the 71 that being processed, and then that's the 35 that have been paid. We then 74 is still on progress. and then the queries, we send the queries to the ex-miners, and they have attended to the queries. So there are no more applications that are coming in from the Department of Health. Thank you.
Chairperson, if you allow me, I'll go to page 13, which talks to the rent mutual assurance, which is actually the people who pay injuries on duty in the mines. We did indicate in the previous meeting that rent mutual has received a list of 18,569 payments from ex-mine workers. They did their work and check all these things and applications that were made in the list, and all the 18,569 cases have been checked against the records of the rent mutual assurance. Only 20 cases, Chairperson, have been registered with rent mutual assurance and have subsequently been finalized, which means rent mutual says on the list that they have been given to them, there is no money that they owe ex-mine workers. Now, we went back to meet with them after we made a presentation to the portfolio committee. They indicated that they also welcome further lists that they can come from ex-mine workers so that they can continue to search whether there could be some benefits which they can pay to ex-mine workers. Chairperson, the overall challenges that this task team is facing is, one, we did indicate them previously, lack of resources ring-fenced to execute the task, such as finance. There is no budget that has been allocated to the activities of the interdepartmental task team. The Department of Labor currently is paying for the activities of the interdepartmental task team. The meetings that are taking place, are financed by the Department of Labor. And also, when ex-mine workers come to bring their list, the Department of Labor does reimburse them. Human resources, lack of full-time staff allocated to the interdepartmental task team. Staff do their normal day-to-day activities over and above the interdepartmental task teams, which means this job is continuously done by officials. We don't have people sitting somewhere dedicating their time to this particular project. It's something that we really need to look at. The last part, Chairperson, was when we came to Parliament, the question was about the criteria that we are using when we pay ex-mine workers. With regard to the UIF, this is the criteria. The first is that the ex-mine worker must have worked for the mines. The period of employment and salary must have been captured on our database. If it's not captured, we do get information from DEBA to help us with the previous salary. It is important that the ex-mine worker must have a 13-digit barcoded ID number. The period of employment must be before the 1st of April 2002, which is when we used the previous act, the previous Unemployment Insurance Act, which was amended and it was effective on the 1st of April 2002. So we're actually dealing with legacy cases, old cases, because we did realize that when there was a merger of Ciskei and Transkei, a lot of people were actually left out. And we know that some of the ex-mine workers have indicated that they were running away from the mines when there were some problems and strikes, so they could not claim their UIF during that particular period. The ex-mine worker must have completed an application form for consideration. Bank account details must be submitted. An affidavit must be submitted to the effect that the person was unable to claim and he actually was leaving the mines because there were strikes that were taking place or she was running away. In the case of a death claim, preference is given to the wife of the deceased. If the wife is not available, then the children of the deceased are being considered. The date of death must be before the 1st of April 2002. The deceased must have worked for at least 13 weeks during the 5 years period preceding the date of death of the contributor. The claim is checked against the historical database, and if it is established that the claim was received and settled, no new claim will be considered, which means we are paying those who have outstanding claims on our record. Finally, our systems are credit-driven systems because our social security is contributory. The ex-mine worker must have credits on the system for the ex-mine worker to be considered. Thank you, Chairperson. That is our presentation.
Thank you very much. Members, Honourable.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question would be that we all know that people who work in the mines, the majority of them are people without formal education, or some might be having basic education which is not adequate to actually provide them with the skills to know how are the processes of claiming are followed, you know. So my question is, what is it that the community is doing or has done in order to track these people and to make them aware that they have to claim and how to claim, because they really need to be assisted, most of them? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Masrumuna.
My apologies. Thank you, Chair. What I would want to firstly appreciate credit should be given with you all the time. We appreciate the effort you have made behind the idea. But that being the case, I'm encouraged by the last speaker. You would begin to understand that majority of these people are from far rural areas, remote, far from the major centers. And you would begin to appreciate that in the past, in the rural areas, it was very difficult to get education by virtue of being a rural resident at that time. And we can begin to appreciate the difficulties these people were faced with then. I would want to recommend, even if the community is still faced with the problem of resources, as a community per se, some of this information we can get from the local chiefs, because these people were being taken from by trucks and buses from chiefs' calls all over the country. Then some of this information we can get from there. It's not that it's totally unavailable. That information is there. You can still find it in the rural areas from the chief schools. That's what I wanted to say. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Master Mbule. Honorable Nyegema.
Thank you very much, sir. I think there's something that the task team reported on after the meeting of the 16th of November, but not on all issues that were raised in that meeting. Because I was expecting that for the interdepartmental task team to come to Parliament today
as much as the background of the interdepartmental task team and the issue are very much important. But if you look at the presentation itself, all the pages, many pages, is the background. It's not talking to the issues that we said the interdepartmental task team must do and come and report on. That's a worrying factor for me. And I think that the point that has been raised by Honorable Maseremul, the issue of how to reach people in the remote areas. In the meeting that took place in East London last year, in the Eastern Cape, there was a form of communication that we agreed on. And Jimmy Manye was... he was not suspended by that time. He was the DG, and then we agreed that the department, together with the structures that were put in place that involve the ex-mine workers, will go around the remote areas. That didn't come forward on the 16th of November. I thought then maybe today we would be told that this is what we have done in order to reach out to the people, but it's not coming forth. The second area, Chair, is the availability of DEBA now, which one appreciates that, because it was difficult to bring DEBA to the party. Because the reason, yes, is to get information of the ex-mine workers, in particular, how much were they earning in order to assist the department in paying out the UIF. But the only thing that we're hearing is that TEBA is cooperating. Is it cooperating by saying, I have received the list of the applicants that you want information on? If yes, how many? That DEBA has already provided back to the interdepartmental task team in order for these payments to be fast-tracked. On the part of the CCOD, I could see even in the report that your previous suggestion that this process must be finalized by the end of the financial year is no longer in place, because that's what we said last. So I thought it's important for me to raise that in order. They mustn't come back next time and say, remember on the 16th, it was our presentation. So I want them to confirm that, to be on record, to say that idea they had to say, come the 31st of March 2011, monies that will be not claimed at that particular time will be used for developmental processes in the Eastern Cape. That is not an issue. I think it's important for them to raise that. The last point, maybe it's because I've been in this committee since I came to Parliament. I'm tired acting DG. Every time when the interdepartmental task team comes to Parliament, challenges of human resources, challenges of finance, I don't know, because what I'm expecting, because in all these the previous meetings, Chairperson, We have said the department must go back and speak to other departments that are involved. Because it's not only the Department of Labor that has a responsibility of making sure that these ex-mine workers are paid. It's not only the Department of Labor. And in fact, even the Premier's office in the Eastern Cape is involved in this process. But every day when they come here, challenges, same challenges. You see, sometimes it's good, Chairperson,
if then the interdepartmental task team is reporting to us to say, these are the attempts that we have made. Because the only attempt that was done, it was to request the office of the deputy president. And that was done just by letter, to write a letter. Now, the letter cannot motivate what you want. Because if you write a letter, I will look at the letter and I will then say, I cannot accommodate you, and then respond back, then does it. Because the issue, what is required here, in order to deal with these challenges, because we can't have the issue of the ex-mine workers forever. It can't be. It can't be. Because we even suggested that you can even employ, because you always complain about one thing, that it's officials of the department who are doing this work. We said, find a way, go to other departments. If it means you have to employ people on temporary basis, people who will look at the issue of mine workers, only ex-mine workers, in order for this issue to be dealt with once and for all. I mean, really, it becomes not good. In each and every meeting, when you receive one response, the challenges are the same. Since I came here in 2009, when I was part of this portfolio committee, there were those challenges up until today. It can't be. I think the interdepartmental system must tell us, if they can't do this, then we'll do it for them. Because they must remember that the interdepartmental task team is as a result of a decision of Parliament, as the background says. So then if you can't do it, let Parliament do it for you. If you can't have a meeting with your colleagues in other departments in order to address the challenges that you are raising, then say it in order for us to do it for you. We can't. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just have three comments to make. The first one is that we did ask, well, we actually gave suggestions about this problem with staff and finance to sort this problem out last year at the November meeting. And there's nothing in this report to say that you've taken our suggestions and tried to do that, or you've put those suggestions to the DG, the acting DG, or to other departments and got a response. This is blank. We gave practical suggestions. I said, please go to this one, ask that one, ask the DG if he can allocate extra staff or whatever, and there's no reply. The committee asked or suggested things, we would expect some sort of a reply at this meeting to say we tried it and it didn't work, or we didn't try it, or something happened. Secondly, I'm glad to see this another 500,000 being disbursed in December and January, because it's been Christmas and New Year and holidays and festivities, and you've still managed to do work. So I would say well done on that. There's been progress. Several more people have got their claims. Money's been disbursed, so something did happen. So obviously there's been progress, and I think that's a good thing. The Department of Health report I find quite strange. We get this report, a week ago? And on page 10, the report a week ago says there's 71 applications processed, 65 queries, 40 applications not been opened, and 6 payments have been made since November. Now suddenly a week later, we've got nearly 40 payments made and the unopened applications are all opened and processed. And, you know, we need to take these documents quite seriously as members of Parliament. How does the Department of Health expect us to believe their verbal report when a week ago it looked like this? Now a week later we're told, no, it's all fixed. You fixed it all in 1 week. I battle to believe your statistics that were given verbally in this committee. We don't have here in this room the method to verify the figures that we are given. And now we must just take a verbal commitment, Chairperson, that it's all changed. It's all fixed. You have the document. The document says it's not fixed. And your verbal report 1 week later says, oh, it's all dealt with. It's gone. Problem's gone. No new applications. Existing ones are all opened. Most have been processed. All these payments have been made in 1 week. But from 16th of November until a week ago, nothing happened. Now in 1 week, it's all fixed. It's just hard for us to take these reports seriously when we get that kind of a thing happening, when for 2.5 months there's no change, and then in 1 week it's fixed. How does that happen? How is it that we must now suddenly just believe the verbal report, Chairperson, when the written report is quite different to that? So I think we should get a report on whether there was any progress on our request that you find funding and staff to close these issues once and for all. And can the health department tell us why their verbal report is so different to the one that they gave us in the document suddenly? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Ollis. In fact, I think we need to start doing the right things and do them the right way. The task the department was given answers to respond to, and what you are getting here are half-baked answers to the questions that were given to the department. I think what I should have done in the beginning was to say that the Director General give us a report, and then the DG will ask them to give that report on his behalf, because when all is said and done, he's the head of department who is responsible for all this. So that when we later make our own determination, they will be informed by what the DG has said, and ownership of all the answers that were given. From where I'm standing, and after having listened to the members here, I don't think we should deliberate further on this matter, because it is clear that what is said by word of mouth does not talk to what is written on the papers, as Honorable Ollis has summarized it now. I'm going to again ask the department through UTG that we'll need a list of names of claimants. If you say 400, and what are we talking about? Because the ex-mine workers came here marching in Parliament. They gave us their names. These are the people who are affected. We've got 18,000 people who are claiming that they got injured at work. And the mining companies are saying only 20, or a fraction of that, are on their list. What are these people? As the interdepartmental committee, we're supposed to be on the side of those who are claiming, those who were established to help those people, not to help the mining companies, but to say these are the people who are claiming, get more information from them. And that information is that where you can get that info. Traditional authorities, in the past when people were getting jobs in mines, the mines were recruiting through traditional authorities. And you know, and most of these people come from the rural Eastern Cape, majority of them. So DG, we're going to leave this matter into your hands so that you take full responsibility for it, so that when we look for reports, we won't be talking to the interdepartmental committee. We'll be talking to you as the accounting officer on this matter. There are questions that were given. If we have lost the questions, we'll talk to the committee secretary and the researchers to resend the questions to the office of the Director General. I think that will be all from me on this matter. Unless if it is something that you want to say, DG, before we move on.
No, thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. I accept the responsibility. Maybe just two comments from my side. The one, Honorable Chairperson, is that I think it is becoming clear that whilst this problem of ex-mine workers affects a number of departments, we have seen recently a drifting of participation from these other stakeholders. And I think it has to do with the accountability, including compiling of reports and the payment issues. I accept we will try from our office, I'll try my level best to convene the high-level people in the respective departments to convey your frustrations and concerns around this matter, including its seriousness, so that we can get the respective representatives participating in this committee to take this task quite seriously, including honoring meetings that are being called. And maybe that explains why some of them are not in this room. And I know previously the committee complained about the participation, because this is not a Department of Labor issue, it's an interdepartmental task team. And under normal circumstances, including Rand Mutual, the trade union's consent should be present when this report is given. But I think the committee can also strengthen my initiative if there was also to be a communication directly from those the office. We will provide a list of the participants of the members of this committee, so that there is also a direct communication from the committee around your frustrations and concerns, and the fact that the respective constituencies should take this matter seriously. And lastly, Chairperson, I think we must also admit on our part that maybe the timing may not have been proper. This is not to suggest or to try and dictate to the committee. We received a notice last week, and the committee tried by all means, and you can see from the report that it was prepared by those that could not make it, that could make the meeting. And perhaps after this meeting, I'll talk to the team, so that even though we don't have a date for the next meeting, but on the issues that we have raised, if there is a need to can generate another interim report with updated information, we will do so, so that you get it, and that when we meet next time, at least we can indicate some progress, including implementation of the recommendations made in November. I know what Honorable Nyakemba said in the minute. And lastly, Chairperson, I think it will also assist us if after the discussions and the finalization of the report, where there are specific recommendations that the committee makes, that we also get those reports, especially the minister's office and my office, in order to finalize or track some of the key recommendations, and that the report that comes to you speaks specifically to those reports. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
I think we're coming to the conclusion of this matter on ex-mine workers. We have a task team, but that task team rests in the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor is the one that is coordinating all. So, and then if you are having And we don't meet only to talk when we are in committee meetings. The office of the chairperson as a researcher and lots of other people that, you know, we can keep each other wired, briefed all the time about what is happening. So that if there are problems like, you know, there's non-cooperation from other people and you want us as a committee to make certain interventions, you know, do so. Tell us on time so that we don't only hear about these things when we're in a meeting where we supposed to be fold in this matter. Because this matter was supposed to be closed in this year, in this month actually. But the way in which we are going, I think it's going to end up going, we'll deal with this matter until next year. So let us keep each other wired. Let's keep each other, you know, let's brief each other from time to time about the progress and the problem and the challenges that we are facing in the we are resting this matter. Let's move to the next issue on the agenda. The sheltered employment and fisheries report.
Whilst Mr. Sinko is preparing the presentation, Honorable Chairperson, I brought along the Chief Executive Officer of the 12 sheltered employment factories. We know that the visit was in the Epping factory in the Western Cape. In the report, incorporated all those, but he will talk to the turnaround strategy that is being implemented to deal with the problems facing the sheltered employment factories across the country where we have presence. And I've also brought along one of the directors in the head office responsible for the sectors such as fishing, and who also participated in a number of symposiums, ministerial visit, including the last visit by the portfolio committee to a number of factories. But also we brought along the inspector, the head of the inspector, Mr. Trevor, who also participated during the hearings that the committee conducted, so that he can assist in responding to very specific aspects. He's based in the Western Cape Provincial Office. But we'll start with the sheltered employment factories. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, DJ.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the Portfolio Committee. The Portfolio Committee on Labour undertook two site visits late last year to two of our factories based here in Western Cape, in Epping and Ndabeni. And subsequent to the visit, there were quite a number of issues that the committee had established as violations of the various pieces of legislation and including the Labour Relations Act. And management, therefore, was requested as a result of that particular visit to provide specific answers to those questions. We subsequently did so, Chair, subsequent to the visit, provided specific answers to the questions, and we then soon realized that the nature of the answers provided lacked the contextual history with regards to the existence of those particular factors. And therefore, in the absence of a much more detailed historical background, with regards to those fractures. You may not necessarily be addressing the root cause of the problem. And as a result, we subsequently decided that it is much more better for the benefit of the portfolio committee to provide a much more comprehensive presentation to the portfolio committee that briefly provides a historical background with regards to those factors. And secondly, what are the current challenges that exist in the factories and what management is attempting to do to deal with those challenges. In a nutshell, Chair, what I'm presenting to the committee today is that you're dealing in the sheltered employment factories with a decade of neglect, because those factories have existed since 1943, primarily to cater for ex-servicemen that would have participated in the Second World War, and predominantly white servicemen. And therefore, they represented at the time an attempt for those who could not be an attempt by the then previous regime to incorporate those who could not be incorporated into mainstream employment, into sheltered employment work, primarily white, since 1943. Post-1994, there has been no major attempts to transform those factors in terms of their racial, gender demographics. And therefore, they are a reflection of the past into the present. In terms of racial representation, in terms of conditions of employment, in terms of primarily compliance with various pieces of legislation in our country. Now, going back to the visit, the recent visit, the visit in the two factories in Endabeni only presented to the portfolio committee members just a microcosm of a bigger problem that exists in the seven of the factories that exist in the nine provinces of the country. Because the picture that we had in Epping and Endabeni cuts across the entire country. Because these factories exist in some of in the seven of the nine provinces in our country. So I've dealt with the in terms of the presentation. I've dealt with the historical background with regards to the size of the factories. Were created, were established in 1943 based on a social welfare model under the auspices of social welfare and not the Department of Labor at the time, but the Ministry of Manpower at the time when they were established in 1943. And they exist in, there are 12 factories in seven of the nine provinces, and primarily not established with the intention of becoming profitable entities, but existing on the basis of what is called preferential procurement from government departments. What the previous regime did, it provided preferential work to those factories with regards to the manufacturing and production thereof, factory furniture, government desks, linen for government hospitals, etc., etc. They had preferential procurement from government departments, and therefore were not required at the time to compete like the rest of the other factories that exist in the industries concerned. They were able to facilitate, at the time, Chair, the employment of close to about 3,000 employees with various disabilities.
And these employees were coming from a pool of disabled ailments, such as mental ailments.
Please, please, can people switch off their phones? Or switch off your walkie-talkie, if it's a walkie-talkie that is beeping. Please.
Physical ailments, visual, auditory, and medical conditions. They were not compelled at the time to comply with any piece of legislation at the time, because they were not regarded as primarily manufacturing entities, but entities with specific responsibility were to cater for the interests of people with disabilities. There have been leadership uncertainties during the last 5 years, resulting from the fact that those factories don't have a legal persona or a legal identity. They were established on the basis of a memorandum then between the Minister of Manpower and management in the factories. Post-1994, there were variations with regards to that memorandum of understanding, and it has continued to be the case that the factories exist on the basis of a memorandum of understanding without any legal identity, whether they are a trading entity, whether they are a public enterprise, etc., etc. They currently don't have a legal persona. Now, part of the neglect entailed the fact that those factories were unable to engage in product innovation with the conditions in the market with regards to products, etc., 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 etc. And therefore, with the introduction, with government deciding that they were no longer going to be provided preferential procurement, they had to reduce the workforce from 3,000 employees to less than 1,000 employees. In the last 3 years, Chair, we've undertaken changes with regards to the factories, changes that entail the following. First and foremost, engaging the National Treasury Technical Assistance Unit with regards to a technical process of ensuring that those factories ultimately do have a legal persona, which is a legal identity. The first phase has been completed, which phase entailed doing a situational analysis with regards to South African conditions for people with disabilities, but also looking at the international environment with regards to people with disabilities. It's option. The first report, Chair, presented to the factories was a report about doing a situational analysis of the number of people in South Africa with disabilities, issues related to the working environment for people with disabilities, and also looking at the international dimension with regards to how countries internationally are dealing with people with disabilities. And there were recommendations subsequent to the report. The recommendations entailed the following, briefly: that the second phase of the business case must entail providing a legal identity to those factories, which legal identity would entail that those factories become trading entities. That's one aspect. Secondly, the recommendations from the first phase suggested that there must be organizational structures with regards to the management of those factories. Thirdly, that the factories, in order for them to survive, that they must trade as any other entity in the market. Now, what we've done, Chair, with regards to the recommendations, is to engage the National Treasury Technical Assistance Unit to assist us with technical expertise to conclude the second phase of the business case. And as a result, the second phase is supposed to commence as soon as possible in order to conclude and ultimately convert the factories into trading entities. What are the major achievements with regards to those factories in the recent past? The Department of Labor, which the factories fall under, has now appointed a chief executive officer whose responsibility is to assist in the turnaround strategy for those factories. And secondly, it has also appointed a chief financial officer whose responsibility is to look at financial matters with regards to those factories. And internally in the factories, we've established a management committee whose responsibility is to ensure that it runs the affairs of the various factories, ensure that various policies and practices and factory managers are appointed, and it facilitates the conclusion of the second phase of the second phase of the business case with regards to those factories. Various policies have been approved whose intention is to comply with the various legislations, the Labor Relations Act, Employment Equity Act, etc., etc. Let me just for a minute spend some time with regards to various pieces of legislation, because that's an issue that the Portfolio Committee raised, particularly with regards to employment equity. I must admit to the Portfolio Committee that those factors are predominantly lily-white. That's a historical fact. We have not been able to transform that environment so that it becomes a reflection of the current demographics, precisely because of the following results. The factories post-1994 had an employment intake of almost about 3,000 employees. With the national government taking away the preferential procurement status of those factories, they had to reduce the number of workers from 3,000 to 1,000. That's one dimension. The second aspect, Chair, is that national and provincial government departments have failed to honor their financial obligations to the factories. And as a result, in total, government departments owe those factories to the tune of about 10 million rands, which has not been paid for quite a number of years. In spite of repeated efforts and attempts to communicate in writing with various government departments, to do so through the leadership of the Department of Labor, they have not been able to honor their financial obligations. That's the second aspect. The third aspect, Chair, in spite of the fact that the factors fall under a department falling under national government, very few government departments, including nationally, provincially, and locally, have been sourcing products that includes furniture, linen from those factories. And therefore, the order book of those factories has reduced almost by about 60 to 70%, because very few government departments are placing orders from those factories. And therefore, we can be able to increase the employment intake in order to ensure that we comply with Employment Equity Act, we comply with issues related to the Textile Bargaining Council, wage rates, comply with various pieces of legislation, precisely because we are not getting the required and necessary support from government departments. But be that as it may, we've made various attempts to ensure that those factories continue to run. In almost all of the factories, in the past, factory managers were acting factory managers. In the recent past, we've appointed paramount factory manager, whose responsibility is to become part of the turnaround strategy. We've complied with the bargaining council agreements, particularly in the textile and clothing industry. Our rates of pay are those that are determined by the bargaining council. The third aspect with regards to part of a turnaround strategy share, given the fact that we're not getting any support from national government with regards to placing orders in those factories, we've now decided that we must diversify production and therefore markets into the private sector. And as a result, we're in the process of concluding a partnership agreement with Ellerin's group of companies, whose responsibility is that they will source some of their furniture for a group of companies falling under Ellerin's group from self-employment factories. So that's a diversification strategy in order to ensure that those factories exist. The fourth aspect, Chair, with regards to part of this turnaround strategy, we've had in our factories what is called an open day as part of a marketing exercise, where we will call in various stakeholders to come into the factories every day. In that particular day, we would showcase the products that people with disabilities are able to manufacture, etc., etc. We've done that open day last year in almost two of our factories. The constraints, just to conclude, is the lack of a legal identity, which we're currently working on with the Treasury Technical Assistance Unit. The second aspect, which becomes also a major constraint, is the lack of funding from the Department of Labor, which sources funding from the National Treasury. Thirdly, there's a shortage of staff which is related to funding, because we can't be able to recruit into the factories competent people at the level of human resources, at the level of the CFO, etc., etc., if we can't be able to provide them with competitive packages. We're not contributing to the National Skills Fund, and as a result, we're unable to source funding for training purposes. The fifth element is income generation. I've indicated, Chair, primarily that national government, including provinces, are not providing the necessary support to those factories with regards to placing orders for furniture, placing orders for government hospitals, let alone the fact that national governments and including provinces owe those factories to the tune of about 10 million rands. In spite of repeated efforts to communicate with national governments for them to be able to meet their financial obligations. Chair, the possibility into the near future exists that the current employment personnel could be increased from 1,000 to 3,000. And therefore, ensuring that those factors comply with employment equity legislation, comply with National Skills Development Act, and therefore being able to comply with various legislations regarding occupational safety and unsafety issues. But that will require some level of government support, government support with regards to the factories, being provided with government work, with regards to the furniture, with regards to government hospitals, etc., 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 etc. In that regard, we'll be able to ensure that our employees, and including senior personnel in the factories, are paid market-related salaries, and in that process, we'll be able to establish additional entities which do not exist in Mpumalanga and Limpopo, because I indicated right at the beginning that the factories are only in seven of the nine provinces, and which exclude Mpumalanga and Limpopo. And with that, Chair, we could become the leading entity in our country that translates the legal framework with regards to caring for people with disabilities into concrete action plans. Thank you, Chair.
What is given by your office. So that is how we operate. Everything is in your office. Honorable Ellis, you have to...
Thanks, Chairperson Ollis. I have to say thank you for the report. It was very detailed and you've given us lots of information. But I have to also say it sounds like a big oops. It took us back to 1943. Well, the new government and the new Department of Labor has been running these sheltered employment factories for 17 years. And it sounds a lot like, oops, we forgot about them for 17 years. 17 years and there's still no legal entity. Do you know how long it takes to open a CC? You need a pen and a fax machine and you need to phone the Register of Companies or CIPRO and it takes about 24 hours. In fact, you can go buy a shelf company from a legal entity and you can start it immediately. I mean, give the chairperson, you know, 2 days and a couple of phone calls and we could open a legal entity. I mean, 17 years, chairperson, to open a legal entity. 17 years to realize that the racial makeup is still not right. I mean, I'm not sure whether that's correct. The places we went to in December, there were a lot of black males in that second factory we went to. In fact, we were a bit intimidated by the group of them. The chairperson at that stage, I remember, had to calm them down. They were quite angry. They were, you remember they were saying that the management were racist because the words they used to refer to some of the staff were very unacceptable and we were quite upset ourselves about it. So I don't know whether that's true across the other factories. We only saw the two in the Western Cape. And at least one of them, the representative of the team, seemed quite okay. But anyway, we're told that they're not right. 17 years, and we still don't have the racial mix right in these factories. We have they've been working on these changes, I think, for, is it 3 years? How long have, 3 years? 2 years? 3 years. 3 years to open a legal entity and do a study on the future of these departments. I mean, quite honestly, a month. You could get a consultant to do it in a month. You could open a legal entity in 3 days, and that's done. But we're taking 3 years. The biggest problem is obviously clients. You know, nobody's buying enough of the furniture and government's not paying. Well, it's typical of government to not pay, and that's a problem which should be forced. You actually have to force government to pay. We showed that in the Western Cape. We cut the provincial government off when they didn't pay the city of Cape Town, and it took about 4 days, and they paid. Millions, they paid. You have to actually get serious with government if you want them to pay, because this is typical of government that doesn't pay. But the problem of clients, I believe, was a legal one. We heard in some of our briefings on site that there were some legal issues with these sheltered factories selling to private companies. And I want to know whether that is true, whether there is a legal problem, whether we have to change a piece of legislation for you to sell your products to Weatherleys or to the Ellerines Group or whatever else. If there's no legal problem, then again, we've waited 17 years to find outside clients. 17 years. I mean, that's just shocking. It seems like, oops, we forgot about these people, and we forgot about these factories, and we just sort of let it fall to pieces in a corner. Why 17 years? Even 3 years? Why 3 years? I mean, this committee could have fixed it in a month if we had the legal power and the authority to just go and do it ourselves. We could just do that. I really can't believe the time, the length of time, and the amounts of money we're talking about here. This department really has not paid attention to this, and they're taking too long, Chairperson, to fix this. You yourself could fix this in a month. I don't know why they're taking so long to fix this. They could sort out the clients, unless there's a legal problem. If there's a legal problem, it will take longer. I understand if the law prohibits that, then that's different. Then we have to change the law. But if the law doesn't prohibit you selling to private companies, you could fix this very quickly. It's taking far too long. Thank you.
Honorable Masrumuna, thanks, Honorable Bolis.
Thank you, Chair. Top Steward, please. Chair, I thought Minister Ollis was going to be a little wiser this time around, to try and be considerate, not to politicize the issue. It pained some of us to speak about the past. It's very painful indeed. You're very fortunate, you didn't have to experience it. We don't expect for you to be a little considerate, a little more wise at this time. because these are issues about life and death. We don't have to speak politics, a lot of politics around these issues. This is about life and death. Chair, thank you very much for the effort you've made. It should be commended, really. If you go back and trace your footprints a little, 1943. I'm 56 years old, and I'm not in a very good mood. I can assure you. From where I'm coming from. Just a year ago, not very long ago, I used to be called a terrorist. How time flies. I'm now Mr. Honorable. Can you imagine? I'm not supposed to be the Honorable. Can you imagine? To be 56 years, to be Honorable Master Mule, just imagine. You're talking about 17 years. You're so fortunate. You're not there. I would want to encourage the department and the people concerned to continue to do the best they can around this issue. I was listening very attentively. And I'm not very sure Mr. Ollis was reading from the same page. I wonder. Talk of 17 years. This is simple logic doesn't allow that. Simple logic, you're too much simplistic. But I don't want to say, we shouldn't politicize this issue. This issue is about life and death, and it's very painful to go back to apartheid again. 17 years is a very little time. Very little. Thank you. I just wanted to, Mr. Ollis, be careful what you say. Because if you go into politics, really, you're going to be paralyzed.
Honorable Nyakemba.
Thank you very much. I think if you are paralyzed, Honorable Ollis, will be employed in the justice implement, but there's your CEO. Yeah, sir. Thank you very much, and I think we must also thank the department for responding to some of the issues that were identified during the oversight visit. I think the just starting from the page that deals with major constraints and followed by future objectives followed by benefits of government involvement. There's no specific point that I want to speak to, but I just want to start there. Because one can see that this is a way of dealing with what we uncovered during the oversight visit. But I think, to you, Chair, it needs some kind of time frame of what do you want to do when, in order for it to be easy to be measured and for us to play some kind of effective oversight, in order if there are challenges in the process, even within that time frame, at least that will be understood. The further one to suggest that including the collection of this approximate 10 million rand, which is owed by national and provincial government departments. I think for me it's important if we put time frames in all these positive ideas of changing this sector around. Because you see, I think one thing which I think is very much important that you need to look at acting DG with your colleagues in the department. How are these workers get to work? How do they get to work? Because that's one thing that they raised, the challenge of the layout in the train stations, taxi ranks, and everything else. Just imagine in a train, the people who are working in the train, they don't think that there are people with disability who are using that mode of transport, and I think DG, these are some of the things. If you look at all the stations, and you look at the platforms, when you change from one platform to another, the layout of the station itself is not conducive to people with disability. So I think that's one positive thing that we need to look at. I think I must also comment on the time between 1943 and 1994 is 51 years. And 1994 and today is 17 years. Then simple arithmetic, you can subtract 17 from 15 to tell you how much. We didn't just decided to take oversight visit. We have looked at what were the reasons for these sheltered employment factories to be under the Department of Labor. Were they correctly allocated in the correct department? Our findings were that the department saw a need when they saw these factories being dumped, that this cannot just be dumped, because they used to belong in the departments of social development, because of these companies not being looked at, in particular the conditions. So that's how the department took them over. So as much as we can argue that they were neglected for 17 years, they are also housed in properties that belong to public works. It can be a total, can be argued that they were totally neglected for the past 17 years. But I think also even that one needs to be looked at. The properties where they are operating, they are all, I mean, it's old buildings. I mean, it's very difficult for those workers even to see senior management because they are in the second or third floor. So then they can't move, there are no lifts, they can't go there. So the point I'm raising, Chair, that there's much work that I think you need to do in relation to, in addition to all the issues that you have raised. And I think it's very much important. So that interaction is not only has to be limited to departments that own these companies, but also public works, Department of Social Development, including Treasury. The Treasury must be involved because in the budget that is allocated to the Department of Labor, this is not taken into account that there is this extra responsibility that the department is looking at. People just look at the Department of Labor as the department that has to deal with pieces of legislation and make sure that there's industrial peace. So I'm saying there's that engagement which Acting DG, together with your colleagues, you need to explore. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Nyakemba. Honorable Manamel, and then Comrade Manamel.
Very important. Especially 17 years later. Thank you very much, Comrade Chair. I think the first note is that because of whatever problems which has been there, a total of 2,000 jobs have been lost, and that this presents an opportunity which, if worked upon, and obviously if you create one job, there are more people who will get to benefit, and I think it's one of the things which we really have to ensure that we encourage the department to work on facilitating that recruitment of 2,000 more people, and also considering the multiply effect, and also falling within the broader government strategy and objectives of creating more than 500,000 jobs. So I think this is one point which we really have to note and follow up. But what is going to obviously also be critical is monitoring that this process feeds into creating a non-racial workplace, because it shouldn't necessarily only be about those who are employed into those factories, but it's to create an ideal and model South African factory where employment is not on the basis of race or any other discriminatory factors, but that employment is based on the fact that people are South African. So I think that's the first point, especially more so that the veterans are in themselves a disappearing breed, but I think also more importantly there are veterans who used to be called terrorists who have not been integrated into whatever system, and their main major benefit is through pensions and all of those. So veterans from MK, veterans from APLA and all of those should be people who are also considered and who has those particular conditions. So the skilling and training of those, I think it's one point that we should know. The second point is that this work is obviously as a result of, or the attention to this factor is as a result of the visit by this portfolio committee. And I think it shows what happens when
the various arms of governments work together. But what I was also going to say in relation to that, Honorable Chair, is that as a committee, we'll have to go back to those workers and those factories, maybe together with the department, and also share on some of these interventions which are being made as part of the follow-up, not only a follow-up based on a report that we're getting from the department, but broadly a follow-up that they are also able to say to us what kind of changes are they experiencing after some of these major achievements that the department is talking about. The final point is with regards to government procurement, and I think it speaks to the specific point that if government is to support particularly such initiatives, I mean the specific government, well, the preferential procurement of government supports what in well includes people with living with disabilities, and I think that's one of the things that we really have to ensure that through that that process that some of these factories do benefit from that. Other than that, I think we should obviously expect more reports, progress done in terms of this very important project. I mean, in the period since the visit to date and the kind of work that has been done, one can only hope that things get better. Thank you.
Following from what you said earlier on in the first presentation, I just wanted us to re-emphasize. Because, you see, nothing can be as soothing as communication, consistent one. Sometimes there will be no need for us to come to boardrooms. Because currently we need to be seen on the field from time to time. So that if we make this a norm, a culture, and to communicate consistently, don't do it for this kind of meetings in the boardrooms, drinking teas and drinking juice, and you know. So if you in the culture of doing things, to communicate through the office consistently, so that we must be seen really doing something. 7 years again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. DG, there was a set of questions sent to the department, and the answers were given here are not necessarily answering some of the questions that were asked. So we would love these questions to be answered. I can make a few examples with the questions that were asked that when I feel they were not properly answered. What benefits are there for the employees, medical aid, housing, and why are they different provident or pension funds, you know, for the workers? The other question, amongst others, is, and this falls again within your department, DG, that the employees are concerned that labor inspectors, when they visit, they don't talk to the workers. They go talk to management in offices, and from there they go away without even saying hello to the workers. We wanted to know why is that, and what is the department doing, you know, to ensure that when labor inspectors go, they must talk to workers and management, not only managers only, because the feeling is that the inspectors are bought by management. The questionnaire, the legal standing of the staff, it still is problematic. I think it needs to be solved, and it doesn't have to take this long to solve it. It shouldn't take this long,
I think it will be, we can do better on this one. And that it becomes a problem, because when there are problems in the factory, or when things are going well, management says this is our factory. They pretend as if it belongs to them. This is what the workers are saying. And that when there are problems, they say, no, this thing is a government thing. The government is not doing its work. So I think we need to find, you know, there will be quick solutions, you know, quick winning solutions for some of this. The labor inspectors, please, please, please. We're talking here about people who are more vulnerable, the disadvantaged, people who are on wheelchairs, people with serious disabilities. There are problems even at the factory about, you know, not only medical aid, but do they have medical facilities like a clinic or a nurse, you know? TG, I think we want these questions answered in full. In full. And the other is, what corrective measures are we going to take against those who have done wrong? Could be corrective measures or punitive, whatever. I mean, it all depends on the situation. But you are there on the ground to assess and see what is this that we can do to correct the wrongs. Just that this was our first meeting, I didn't want as the chairperson from here to persuade the house and send you picking, so that you can bring answers to the question. You see, we give you written questions, and instead of answering our questions, you give us a long historical background of where you came from, which is good for me and some members who are new in the committee. But the purpose of today was to get answers to questions. Next time you come to this meeting and tell us stories, we're going to send you back home. And it's going to be very painful to do that. DG and members, I think we need to raise the bar in terms of performance in this committee, particularly with our relationships with the department. We need to raise the bar. We got an input from the AG, from the Auditor General, about the performance of the department in the past. We'll be engaging with you on your program of action, you know, your performance plan. We're not just going to approve the budget without knowing what the budget is. We'll have to go through your annual performance plan and look into how the department is run, because that is our mandate, to play oversight on the department. And I'm promising you, we're going to raise the bar. And I'm, you know, so if you don't answer questions as asked, you're going to spend more time coming to the committee meetings. We'll even hold them during the night to accommodate you flying from Pretoria coming here. The members I know are committed to that, to making sure that the department is moved from the red. It goes into a better light, you know, in terms of the shades that are given by the AG's reports. Rest assured, we're going to raise the bar. And thank you very much, TG, for the report. This the last one on our agenda is fisheries. The fishing industry. Can we hear something about that, TG? Thank you. There were issues raised, even.
I did. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I did indicate in my general remarks that in terms of the fishing sector, we brought in a person who participated in the various imbizos, including visits, but we also brought in the inspector who specifically participated or accompanied the portfolio committee in those visits that were conducted to a number of fisheries. And Mr. Bailey will talk to the issues. I must indicate that there was no formal report. I did take the chief director to task, and in fact, I instructed that he leave Pretoria to come here, but then unfortunately the meeting that he's in had already started. His claim was that, you know, the information got to him late, but I think Chairperson is one of those things that I'm sure going forward we will make sure that it doesn't happen, because, you know, there was this view that this was the head office matter, and I said, no, you were part of the trip, and your office should have been here. But nonetheless, we got one person. I'll make sure that there's a follow-up report that is submitted. But I brought Mr. Tolis to speak to the issues raised.
I just want to check, is there a written report about this?
Thank you, Chairperson. The written report was submitted to head office regarding the inspections that took place after the overview visit.
I'm asking about during the, there were issues that were raised by the committee during the visit to the fishing industry, and we wanted answers. The committee wanted answers to those. And, that is what I want to know, Babu, because I don't have that report on me now. Maname, let's give Honorable Maname.
Thanks, sir. Look, I think it would have been fair if, even if there is a report, that we receive the report prior, but I think what is even worse is that we do not even have anything in writing before us. So we're only going to rely on our ears, and I think it's going to be very difficult for us to do that. So what I propose we do is that if, given the fact that we have not received a written report, so that we peruse it as members of the committee, and that it would be unfair for us to give quality input, that we get the report first and then interact with it later.
Honorable Nyagemba. Thank you very much. I concur with what Honorable National Secretary I wanted always to laugh because he has not been laughing for the last 5 minutes. Chair, I think as I indicated earlier, I agree with him, because really we will listen. We can't make any reference. And I don't know how did this happen, because the oversight visit was not, in fact, the report itself that the committee adopted late last year. I know, we adopted it late last year, I think on the 18th or 17th of November, somewhere there, when I adopted that report as the portfolio committee. Now, I'm asking myself, if sheltered employment factories can report, where did they receive that report?
because the presentation from the sheltered employment sectors is writing and is talking to the oversight report. Now, the area of inspection, there's nothing, because the report, all the areas of inspection, inspectors going to factories, not talking to workers, talk to management and call back, and all those things, is not matters that were only applicable to the sheltered employment factories. We visited, I think, five fishing factories. Now, the provincial official says the report around inspection was dispatched to head office. I think then now the acting DG must investigate that. Who received that report? Who that report was sent to? And why there was no prepared presentation for this meeting in relation to that? As much as we understand that we adopted the report very late, we adopted the program early this year, in fact last week, and it can be two sections within the department that can prepare a response, and then the other does not. Because look at that report, acting DG, it will tell you factory by factory at which issues were raised by workers, and what is the committee's general observation after talking to workers and talk to management. What is it that we then observe as a result of that? So my if to you, Jefferson, if that is okay with you, because today is Wednesday. If not later than Friday, then that kind of investigation of what happened can be in your office, not later than Friday. I think that will be fine. Thank you very much, sir.
Honorable Master Rumbuna.
Thank you, Chair. I think we are unnecessarily too articulate on this issue. In the running parliament, we're going to say, let them go out and do 50 push-ups. I would suggest, why don't we go out for 5 minutes and come back with an answer? Because we are saying nothing, really.
Thanks, Honorable Oh, yeah, the 50 push-ups. Okay. You know, the people were told during oversight that we're going to need answers to the questions that are being asked. It's not that they are being ambushed. In fact, the honorable members, I think we need to march this committee, have a day where we'll march them through the desert, let them dehydrate a little bit. I think we need to do that, because, you know, people must know that workers' rights are human rights. Workers are human beings. They are people. We're talking about our fathers. Some of us are children of the working class. We come from the working class. We are from working families. And so do most of you here. And the rights and the working conditions and all, we're talking about our relatives, we're talking about members of our family. So if we flatter when our people are at the worst receiving end from industries, particularly in the fishing industry, I've read the reports about the oversight visits. They are really depressing. Where there is no, in some factories actually, occupational health, it's only on the papers, you know. It's written on the papers. It's not there on the factory floor. I was even told that from the reports that even when the committee went to visit the factories, they were told that it is dangerous to go into a particular area. But there were workers working there, you know. They were refused permission to enter that section of the factory. And there are, instead, there are cases where workers say, when you get a cut, when you get injured, you are put aside to go and stop your bleeding on your own. You go to apply your own first aid, you know, press that wound until the blood stops. That used to happen in the bush, Togo. It cannot happen in factories. It cannot happen in the factories in a democratic South Africa. Please, DG, let us get these answers, and we're giving you 5 working days to present that report to the committee. And we want all the questions asked to be answered in those reports. And we don't want the yes and no. We need to, there must be explanation why this thing happened. This is what we are going to do to right this wrong. It is an urgent thing, you know, we could lose people in those factories. And then, I'm trying to use very good words, members, so that we don't make each other angry in this meeting. I'm really disturbed by this. ATG?
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I accept the recommendations of the committee. We will make sure that you receive that report. Maybe, Chairperson, if it's possible during our appearance next week, if there's a time slot or if there's some time available, I know we'll be dealing with different matters, that you allocate some time during that period. I will bring along the chief inspector, the DDG responsible for inspections, and the chief of operations in this province to come and talk to the report that they would have sent you by Friday this week, so that if there are very specific issues that honorable members may want to follow up, at least I have the chiefs of those sections in the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. The other is the sheltered employment. You need to make linkages with the Department of Military and Veterans so that we have all veterans, even veterans of the liberation movement, to be accommodated on this, because we do have veterans with disabilities, people who fought in this country for democracy. That they should be there. We need to make those kind of linkages. Are there further issues before? Or is you're okay? This is the end of our meeting. We'll keep you posted, TG. Let's keep this interaction going. Thank you very much. Sorry, before, I just rushed into business and left the administrative ritual. The matters, apology matters, we've got 3 apologies. And that is from Honorable Makubele Mashele and Honorable Yengeni
ministries on party deployment in the Northwest, and Honorable Advocate A. Albert. These are the only apologies we have. The rest did not apologize. Thank you very much.
I'm gonna sing that song.
That song works.
What's Abra's story?
He was singing a song, yes. He was too bloody happy yesterday.
Aibo, today? He normally sings on Friday.
I didn't know if that girl did him good the night before. But
and he normally sings on Friday, can't he?
When is payday tomorrow?
Oh!
Then we can sing. And she'll carry a bag with her.
She'll carry a handbag. They're having the kind of discussion that looks like we're going to say no at the end.
You arrived at the right time.
Thank you.
how we're going to work this way because we don't have